The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
Yes, Dublin aren't in great form, but they're bored out in their mind. Paul Mannion and Jack McCaffrey aren't playing, yes, because of the stress and the strain, but they're a bit bored.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The Olympic Show on OTB Sports with Indeed, proud partner of Team Ireland.
How are you getting on, Reese?
I'm doing good.
Let me get this straight. So over the past month, you created history by being the first Irish gymnast in an Olympic final. You debunked a myth that one couldn't bonk on the Olympic bed, I believe, and now you're back in Newton Arts. Is that all correct?
Yes, that's all correct.
I was actually just checking before the show. I presume this man is still over there, but obviously you're back home. So what's the last week been like? How are you feeling right now?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm feeling in positive energy and... Just kind of stepping away from gymnastics a little bit at the minute.
Getting your head around normal life.
Yeah, for sure.
So when did you come back and what's the normal process? I guess some Olympians stay on a bit longer and you came home anyway over the past week or so.
Yeah, so you were meant to actually leave 48 hours after your last event. So we just jetted off the next morning. That would always be the plan because obviously there wasn't any competitions after that finals anyway. So yeah, we left straight away the next morning.
So I think when we were all watching TV, we saw like the live footage of your folks all back home in Newton Arts watching the final and all that. How have they been since? I'm sure they literally welcomed you with open arms.
Yeah, they did. I mean, it's exactly how I like it, coming back and seeing my immediate family just at the airport, along with my coach Luke's family as well. It was great to see them because I know how much his family have sacrificed as well. So to see them come together, welcome us back at the Dublin airport, it was very special to see everyone who supported me be there.
So on your flight home, were you with other Olympians or are you on your own?
We flew into London, so we were with other Team GB Olympians, and then we had the connection flight to Dublin. But I was just with my teammates, Meg Ryan as well, flying back.
And what's it been like kind of taking it all in terms of the achievements? I think everyone in Ireland who watched your reaction in particular was just amazed by your PMA, I suppose, your positive mental attitude. When you come down then and wonder, you know, what might have been, what has your thought process been over the past week or so?
I mean, my immediate thought was obviously disappointment, of course, because I know that I'm so much better than what I showed. But that's just one of those things that it's sport. It's almost the beautiful side of sport because it's the unpredictable thing that happens. You know, I haven't fallen on that skill the entire build up to this competition, and it was just one of those things where, like, you know, my finger got caught under my hand, and that was enough to throw me off the horse. That's sport, you know. The unpredictable always happens, and I think that's what makes it so exciting. That's why everybody tunes in to the Olympic Games, because obviously nobody knows the results. That's why you're watching the Olympic Games, and exciting things like that happening make sport. But you know, now I have the pleasure of making everybody that little bit more nervous now when they watch me.
Well, okay, so when the incident happened, obviously, how were you, like, and I mean this literally, how were you able to get back on the horse, compose yourself in the few seconds that you had? How were you able to get back on the horse, perform as you did subsequently, in the knowledge that all that work had kind of, you know, fallen, but you were still able to compose yourself? Mentally, that must have taken some effort.
Yeah, it's always difficult falling that early on in the routine. So I fell on the second skill, I got back up and repeated that skill, and then went all the way to the end of that routine. So I was essentially doing that routine knowing that no result will have come from doing it. But being trained throughout the years, you know, this is something that gymnastics just teaches me so much, is just that determination, and that's exactly what I showed when I got back up on the horse, finished off the routine, and had my dignity intact after that. Of course, still insanely disappointed, but you know, the fact that I can't get up after that fall shows what kind of person I am, that I'll not just drop the head and let it affect the rest of my performance.
How much of that is down to yourself? How much of that is down to Luke? How much is that down to the sport of gymnastics itself? Because I think the majority of people would have just fallen into a complete hole. And we've seen so many Olympians who just, you know, they struggled mentally, I suppose, at that stage. And you've had that crushing disappointment in, you know, in something that takes place over such a short space of time. So you're talking about really fine margins there. And yet you're as composed as a newsreader afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I can't really dedicate that to one thing in particular. It's just a bunch of different things. Gymnastics, just being a gymnast has helped me a huge amount with that kind of positive mental attitude and just maintaining, have my head held high after a failure like that. And then also, obviously, working closely with my coach Luke, he teaches me a lot about that. But then just throughout life, you pick different things apart to help you in things, in situations like that. So, you know, I knew that going, finishing the routine, I needed to finish it strong, just to show everybody that I could finish it strong. And, you know, I wasn't just going to let all of my work go to waste. I wanted to at least show everybody what I could do. And I feel like I showed that well. And then obviously the disappointment is still there, but I knew I had to go and give some good interviews and show everybody what kind of person I am and how positive I can be, because I was showing that I was disappointed, of course, but I'm not going to let that disappointment affect the rest of my performances and my career by any means. I'm going to say that and show that it's going to get me more motivated than ever, and that's exactly what it's done.
But like, you know, there's been a lot of debate around mental health at the highest echelons of sport. Obviously, you know, Naomi Osaka comes to mind, and, you know, Olympians as well. Like, have you any idea of how, you know, that positive speech that you gave and that sort of attitude and that, like, I'm getting up on the horse again, have you any idea how, I guess, you know, inspiring that is to young people and to people who've probably been in a situation before where maybe they got to a final, they disappointed, or they've had setbacks, as you do in your sport? For somebody at 22 years of age, it just seemed to be exactly the message that, okay, we're at the top level, but let's go again, let's, you know, we still have a life ahead.
Yeah, well, exactly. How selfish would it be for me to take that opportunity and turn it into a negative? You know, that's an opportunity and a platform at the Olympic Games to talk to younger generations. And, you know, that's something that obviously comes into my head quite often, is talking to younger generations. When I do interviews, I'm thinking about talking directly to younger gymnasts or younger athletes or even anybody outside of sport. Even I know that that's a platform to emit positivity to people and show people that the greatest glory lies not in never falling, but in rising every time we fall. So that's I love that quote, because it just encapsulates sport and encapsulates life in general, really, because I feel like sport is a great metaphor for life. And a lot of people can see an interview like that. And, you know, if it makes one day better for them, then that's my job done.
Yeah, and a lot of FA Cup finalists who lost would have said, oh, it was much better, like much better just to get to the final and bow out at the semi-final stage. And you were exactly like that. I think you were basically essentially saying before the final, it would have been a lot worse were I to go now. I've gotten there and this is kind of like I've achieved something and I'm an Olympic finalist at the end of the day, regardless of what befalls me now.
Yeah, that's exactly it. But of course, that's not where I wanted to stop. I was disappointed not walking away without a medal there. I'm not afraid to say that by any means. I'm not, you know, like downplaying the whole situation. I was going there to win gold. But at the same time, I was still incredibly proud to be that first ever Irish gymnast to make an Olympic final in gymnastics. You know, it's picking apart the positives, but then also looking at the negatives and making me even hungrier for that success. So going into Paris, going into World Championships, that's in the middle of October. You know, I'm wanting those gold medals wrapped around my neck. You know, we're not just going there to participate anymore. In fact, I never was just going there to participate. I was always going there for a medal. And I feel like that's what's brought me to this standard in the first place. If I was just aiming for a final, then, you know, I might have not even made that final. But I'm aiming to be the greatest of all time in this sport. And, you know, I'm trying to reach that as much as possible.
As an Irishman, as an Northern Irishman, is that a difficult thing to say? Because I feel in this country, we don't have an innate kind of ability to say... for a kid of your age to say I'm, you know, hoping to be the best of all time in this sport might be construed to be arrogant, when in fact it's positivity. When I met you, I think in 2019, you just qualified for the Olympics, and I spoke to everyone afterwards about this kid, how confident you were. It wasn't arrogance, it was confidence, but it's not an innately Irish or Northern Irish trait, I would argue.
Yeah, and I don't see why it isn't, though, because there's so many amazing sports people from this island. Katie Taylor is obviously the one that just comes to mind, because she's undoubtedly the greatest to have ever done it, and she's from Ireland. I don't see why more sports people don't look to her and go, okay, it's possible to be the best to have ever done it in your sport. And that's very inspiring to me, to always see Katie Taylor giving it her all and being the best. And it just makes me think that, you know, what is holding me back from being the best? I think the stigma of almost just downplaying your performance to make the post competition interview a little bit easier is just the easy route out. Whereas I want to set my standards way higher, and I want to achieve those standards. I'm not scared of saying it.
Okay, well, let's go back to your semi-final performance. How would that rank in terms of out of 100 for you, and how much could you have improved on that potentially in the final? How good did you feel afterwards?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't my best routine by any means, but it was definitely enough to kind of show everybody that I'm capable of getting that gold medal. There was actually three of the top scorers, mine included, were joint first, and that's how we qualified into the final.
In some respects, it was perfect, because you hadn't perfected it, but you had left a bit on, which is perfect going into a final, I guess.
Yeah, it is. I just needed to work on the execution a little bit going into the final. Of course, it didn't pay off in the end, but even that qualification routine, it was a crazy feeling, because as soon as I landed the dismount, thought to my head was, I'm an Olympian, because obviously that was my first ever performance at the Olympics. And then the score came in, and the thought in my head was, you're an Olympic finalist. And then I actually just burst into tears.
Amazing.
Because there's so much relief after that moment of waiting on the score or doing the routine. The relief is crazy, because it's a moment where all of your hard work has just paid off. And It was a very special moment, and a moment that I'll never forget.
And then, so when Max Whitlock has his performance in the final, I was wondering what your thought process is then, because it was so good, and like, you know him well. He's 28, so he's 6 years on you. So he'd set a really high bar before you'd actually hit the horse. So what was your thought process then, or was it just completely out of your head?
I don't really think about other people's performances when I'm performing in the moment. I think about other people's performances, of course, when I'm in training and stuff, see what my competition's like, maybe use that to push me a little bit in training. But when it comes down to the competition, I'm doing my routine. I'm doing my job and my job alone. And, nobody else's routine is going to affect that. So I feel like I've got my vision very straight when it comes to competing, because I see the scores, I see the routines, but they don't affect me.
And what was the crack with Max afterwards? I'm sure you had some words.
No, I don't think I talked to him afterwards at all, really.
So I guess you've basically been around the Irish bubble as well. And what's that atmosphere been like over there?
Team Ireland was an amazing team to be a part of. It was so positive. Everybody knew that they were there to, you know, do a job. It was such a great atmosphere, you know, in that little apartment block that we were all in the center of the village, the Irish flags flying proud, looking over the dining hall and everything for everyone to see. It was such a great atmosphere in that village. All of the staff, every athlete in Team Ireland, they done an amazing job just making it feel like home, and that was a very special thing to be a part of.
And did you have any crack with Rory McIlroy, because you're from, like, what, a few miles down the road from each other, effectively?
No, actually, he wasn't staying in the village, I don't think. So the thing was, with different athletes, everyone was coming at different times, so there's a good few athletes that I would have missed because, you know, their competition was a little bit later than mine and everything. But yeah, I don't think Rory was staying in the village actually, but hopefully we'll get in touch soon and talk about our County Down roots.
Yeah, and
maybe you can give me some tips on how to hit a golf ball.
Maybe you can get him on a pommel horse, but the boxers and the rowers and all that, I'm sure you derive like a lot of kind of enjoyment because you are part of a team. You know the sacrifices that these guys made, incredible physical demands on all three sports, arguably.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a mutual respect between everybody because everyone knows that it's an achievement just being there at the Olympics. Everyone just has that mutual respect. There's no, and everyone knows how big of an event it is. So everyone's helping each other in any way they can. If it's words of encouragement or literally physically helping someone training or something like that, everyone is there as like a family, as a Team Ireland family. And it's a great family to be a part of.
What's next for you now?
The World Championships are back in Japan in the middle of October. So that'll be a good one to go to and a good one to go there and win. So that's the next goal for sure. I'm stepping away from gymnastics just for these next couple of weeks, and then I'll be back at it more determined than ever.
What do you do for the next couple of weeks and kind of relax with your family and, I suppose, resume normal life for an oasis in the desert anyway?
Yeah, because the past year and a half, really, everything has just been focused on Tokyo. And like literally everything. I haven't been seeing friends, obviously COVID as well. I didn't want to come in close contact with anybody, really. So, you know, I wasn't seeing friends. I wasn't seeing family. I was only seeing immediate family. I was spending most of my time in Dublin away from everybody. And the focus was just gymnastics. And I'm glad I'd done it. You know, there was no regrets on that competition build-up because I put 100% effort into it. But now that Tokyo is finished, I can step away from gymnastics a little bit, give my mind a little bit of a break and focus on other things in life just.
Like your guitar, this is in from Paul. Are those Reese's guitars in the background? Will he give us a blast of Wonderwall?
No, I cannot play a guitar. That is my dad's guitar.
Can you get your dad on there? We've had enough of you at this age.
He's at work. He's at work. Yeah. Working hard.
You'll have to pick up the guitar for your many talents. Another one from Manning. Well done, Reese. You are a model athlete and did us proud. Yeah, the model athlete thing. You're obviously marketable as well. Like how do you kind of make a career out of this? It's a sport that's obviously very, very unique. It's rare for any gymnast in Ireland to do anything of the note that you've done. So you are obviously a very marketable product. You're young and you're very positive. So I guess there's a lot to be, you know, positive about, looking forward to as well into the future for your career.
Yeah, it's exciting. And the experience at Olympics and, you know, the general hype around it all, obviously the likes of that jumping on the beds video just went viral, and it just shows the amount of attention that is on the Olympic Games. So that makes me even more excited for the next one, because it's bringing attention to gymnastics and you know, showing people what an incredible sport it is. But then obviously, yeah, I mean, it's good for me too. It's seen you know, the hard work kind of being recognized on that platform. And I never really understood the whole Olympics thing being so big. Obviously I watched it every single year, but everybody comes back and says how big of a situation it is around the world. And I got to experience that firsthand this time around. So I can't wait for the next time. And I'm going to put on an even better show then.
This might be a stupid question, but you're looking at Max, he's 28. So what's the optimum age at this, or is there an optimum age? You're 22, which I presume gives you scope to be around for some time.
Yeah, for sure. Especially on the pommel horse, it's a more low impact event than, for example, the floor exercise or the vault, where, you know, there's such a huge demand on your joints. There's a demand on your joints on the pommel horse too, but it's less impactful. So you can go a little bit longer on pommel horse. So I'm wanting to at least go to LA 2028, at least. So that's a very exciting thought. And I also don't want to end my career on an injury. So I want to end on a nice high, or at least a respectful finish. I want to make it my mission not to be injured by the end of my career, but who knows, it's sport.
And in terms of like looking ahead to October then, what's your actual training routine between now and then? Do you sort of slowly build it up? And isn't it an advantage that you've been to Japan before now at this stage, so you have a bit of previous, I guess?
Yeah, it's great that I've been to Japan. I've been to Japan twice now. So early 2020, before coronavirus kicked off, I went there for a training camp. And that was great to do that. So that set me up nicely for the Tokyo Olympics. And then, yeah, to go back to Japan, I just love that country so much.
Why so?
What's that?
What's to like? A lot of people say this, but Japan's an amazing place. What's so amazing about it?
The people. I've never been to somewhere that the people and the culture have affected me so much. I'm coming back home and implementing their just kindness and general energy around strangers. It's very admirable when, you know, I love the bows. I love that so much. The bowing to everybody, you know, making eye contact, bowing, saying hello. And I don't know, you just don't see that back home too often. Obviously, you get the odd person that's really, really nice and saying have a good day at a coffee shop or something. But everybody in Japan does it, and I absolutely love that.
And will you be watching the Olympics now, watching Kelly Harrington and so forth on Sunday and seeing how they get on?
Oh yeah, Kelly Harrington is such a huge role model of mine now. Especially after those games, she felt like a team captain to Team Ireland. Of course, she was the flag bearer at the opening ceremony. But if I came into contact with her, you know, having a conversation, meeting her in the physio room or something, her positive energy was infectious. It was
even
so
on
cool.
You.
Yeah, for sure. It was really, really cool to be around Kelly. And she felt like the Team Ireland captain for sure. And I have no doubt that she's got every capability to go and get that gold medal.
So before we finish up, I think just on behalf of everyone, got to thank you for the amazing fun that you've provided for everyone who's watched the Olympics and watched you get to the final, and your response to a setback. But what would your message be to... I know you spoke about before you watching the Olympics and being wowed by these Olympians as a kid yourself. What would be your message to the 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 year old listening in, or even the teenager who wants to go down the route of gymnastics or wants to be an Olympian, him or herself?
Yeah, I mean, this is an amazing sport to get into. So no matter what level you want to enter gymnastics at, I couldn't recommend it more. It's a thrilling sport to be a part of. And for any younger generation of any sport, just know that the sky is the limit, really. There's no point in setting your standards lower than they need to be. Irish athletes can be at the top of their game worldwide and compete to be the best. And it's completely in the question for you to be able to be at the top of your game.
And so where do you go on holidays now, or what do you do to totally recuperate ahead of your next challenge?
I mean, for this week, I'm just spending time with family at home in Newtownards. Going into Newtownards town as well, it's always a pleasure just to see people, see the amount of people and support that I get in Newtownards. So it's very humbling to be part of this community. And next week, I might think about going away somewhere, but
give us a clue,
Reese. Yet.
Give us a clue. Where are you going to head?
I'm not sure, really. Anywhere on the green list, I guess. it's all up in the air now, but I'll probably make a last minute decision.
That's the best way to do it. It's been amazing talking to you as ever. Can't wait to see how you get on in October. And thanks a million for coming on.
Yeah, thanks so much.
That was Reese McClenaghan. Not sure we've met anyone as inspiring as a sports person, full stop, in recent years in Ireland. Just absolute positivity, despite a setback that I think everyone who was watching that, and obviously somebody like yours truly, who does not watch the pommel horse every day of the week, everyone who was watching, the heart sank as that incident happened, where he obviously kind of fell off or whatever. and then you're just wowed by his reaction afterwards. Our Olympic coverage is with thanks to Indeed, who believe the world works better when people are given every opportunity to unleash their true talents. Hashtag Team Unleashed. Brendan O'Brien, who's coming in now from Tokyo. Very positive man yourself, Brendan, from time to time.
If you say so, Johnny, I'll take that. Thanks a million.
Yeah, we have to bargain with the truth, I suppose, from time to time on this show. How are you keeping?
Very well, yeah. I just made a mad dash across Tokyo there. I was over at Tokyo Stadium for Natalia Coyle's heartbreak, and I'm sure you've been talking about it already. But
I presume a mad dash across Tokyo isn't like a mad dash across Dublin to go from like Dame Street to across the Liffey or something. What's that like?
No, it's the old cliches. It's trains on time. You can literally set your clock by it. I don't know what Tokyo residents did before they had mobile phones and you just check what station you're at the tip of a button. But even for a know-nothing foreigner like myself, it's grand. I even managed to navigate my way through Shinjuku Station. So anybody who's been there, I only got lost for 10 minutes.
Well, that's not bad. Natalia Coyle, I don't know. I mean, what can you say about this? She's effectively... If not on the verge or on the cusp of, she's in with a shout of a medal here in the pentathlon. She's on a horse who's been previously ridden by a previous rider who clearly didn't get on the well with the horse. Now, you can blame the horse or the rider there, but Natalia Coyle, this is like a jockey getting on a horse who's basically refused that offence 10 minutes previously, has this in his or her head. She gets on the horse, and all her kind of good work is more or less thrown out the window. It was really, really bizarre watching this because, like, it's 95% horse, 5% human, basically, at this pursuit. What could she do?
Well, she couldn't do anything, and that's the problem. And we saw it in even more dramatic fashion with the German rider who was going for the gold medal and
in
just
absolute
in floods
tears and agony.
I mean, that was distressing to look at. It was distressing for her. It was distressing for the horse. It was distressing for everybody. And, you know, listening to it on TV, I think the commentators I was listening to did a good job of kind of, you know, putting it into perspective. But you're right, Johnny. What can you say about it? I mean, it flies in the face of what modern sport is about. Like, I'd have a bugbear about modern sport that it's too coached. Everything is nearly too predictable at times. That there's not enough unpredictability about it. But this is just, this veers over to the complete far side. And it just looks, people are talking about, you know, that's 5 years of Natalia Coyle's life. That's her career. I mean, she was gunning for London 2012 when she was a teenager. She was riding ponies when she was much younger than that. That's all funneling up to this one point that, as she said herself, she did brilliantly in the swimming. She did brilliantly in her fencing. She was talking to us, a few of us out here last week, and talking about the amount of effort she's put into her fencing over the years. You know, just routine, 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 all the effort, all the expense, all the heartache. And she nailed that. I mean, she had good figures in her fencing. She did good in the swimming. And then, like you say, she comes up to that and it's like flicking a coin in the air. Heads, you get a good horse, and B, you get a bad one. And I know, we see the variations on Twitter for and against all this, and you have people talking about already that those are the rules in modern pentathlon, but it's just so anachronistic. And I know that's the very nature of the sport. I mean, it was devised in the 19th century for cavalry officers, or based on what cavalry officers needed to do. And maybe we'll talk about the changing face of the Olympics later in this chat, but it just does... It sticks out like a sore thumb that something like this could happen. I mean, what would the equivalent be in the men's or women's 100 metres on the track like? Would it be some volunteer, you know, running sideways across the track and playing a game of tag or something? I don't know. It's unprecedented.
Well, so she ends up finishing 24th in the Olympic modern pentathlon after Constantine, who I think will certainly go down in Irish sporting history because she, obviously, as you mentioned, she'd done very well in the swimming and in the fencing. So she goes in. If Ruby Walsh or if Lester Piggott or anyone who's ever been on a horse, Keane O'Connor, anyone got on this horse, was literally no hope whatsoever. This horse, I think, registered 72 faults or something like that in the end, refused, just did everything wrong. He was either mentally shot himself after the previous performance of the rider before him. So Natalia was she was lamb to a slaughter, essentially. But what kills me is that she'd so much effort put into this. She's coming to the end of her career, years and years and years, and people tune into the Olympics for a couple of hours in the summer. summer and then they forget about it for another 4 years. The Nike's in Italia is away in the dark corner, in a dark room or whatever she is, she's working away doing long, hard hours, summer, winter, autumn, spring, and then she meets Constantine and she's no chance.
Yeah, and I know you would have seen at RTE as well, her post-match clips, for a better phrase. We were talking to her as well, and you and I have spoken about this before, actually, Johnny. You know, you might be over in Cheltenham and how you get that raw emotion of somebody that literally is just dismounted, maybe from a Gold Cup, for good or for bad. They might have won the Gold Cup. They might have suffered a horrible misfortune. And just the raw intensity of the emotions that you get there. This was maybe even a level above anything I've seen in that sort of theatre in Cheltenham. It was just how she held it together, both with us, the print guys, and TV. I just don't know. It was just every word was a struggle for her to get out. And the thing about modern pentathlon as well, there's a lot of talk about the sport's future. Back in 2013, it looked like it was going to be dropped off the Olympic roster, and people were saying back then, this is an anachronism. It doesn't deserve its place. And the format will change again, I believe, in Paris in 2024. So I think the show jumping will be first or whatever. But nothing I've seen seems to address this issue that we are all talking about and that the entire Olympic watching world is talking about, which is what do you do with the horses? But, I mean, if you're talking about bringing horses with you, that's a massive expense, as you know. That changes the logistics for everything. I mean, it's already, I would imagine, a very expensive sport for people to get into. You start doing that as well, it adds another conundrum on top of it.
Well, you mentioned, you know, the post, I don't know if you want to, what you want to call it, the post-catastrophe interview. We just had Rhys McLennan on there. I thought his interview after his final was one of the most striking pieces of live sporting interviews I've ever seen. But she was magnanimous. I mean, she was actually magnanimous. She wasn't really apt to blame the situation that befell her. From absolutely nothing could she do about this. And despite the fact, as you mean, every word was a struggle for her. It was so difficult, yet she somehow had it in her heart to not really play the blame game.
Yeah, it was like her performance in the swimming and the fencing as well. It was unbelievable. I huge admiration for her, the way that she dealt with that, and not to kind of give out about, you know, how the fates aligned against her, but then to kind of talk about Kelly Harrington and wish her the best and what a gold medal can do, what sport can do for young women and girls coming through. I mean, look, we've said it already. I don't know how to compartmentalize that. I mean, imagine putting yourself in those shoes. Imagine 12, 13, 15 years of your life has just come crashing down around your ears because of something outside of your control. And the likes of me sticks a microphone in your face 20 minutes later and asks you not just what went wrong, but journalism being as it is, what about Paris in 2024 as well? I mean, it's just mind-boggling. Like, and that, look, that's the nature of the game as well. But it's so tough to process all that. And I know you were talking to Reese and all and other Olympians since they've come home as well. It's going to take a long, long time for that. I mean, Sport Ireland, the Institute, I know they have psychologists who would be trying to prep athletes for stuff like this for the post-Olympic lull. And there will always be a lull. If you come back with a gold medal back to your life and you're looking out at the rain and the wind in the middle of November and you're thinking, God, Tokyo seems a long time ago now. You multiply that by something that befell Natalia Coyle or Rhys McLennan very, very hard. And you know, these are people who need support in the next 6 months or a year as they look ahead, you know.
Did you find as well, when you do an interview like that, you kind of almost, a part of you starts to collapse inside because what do you say to a person like that?
Yeah. Yeah, you absolutely do. And look, we all know there's a number of the usual questions that you ask. I mean, it's not rocket science. It's not so much the questions you can ask, it's how you can ask them as well. I mean, but what are you asking them? What happened? Why did it happen? What did you feel when it happened? How did you feel, Natalia, on that run going around, having to run the laser run afterwards, knowing her chance at a medal had literally crumbled. You know, I mean, what was her best hope at that stage was maybe to squeak a top 10, but she's done that twice already. And like you say then as well, you know, it's like when a GA manager is just dumped out of the All-Ireland final and 20 minutes later we're saying, are you going to stay on for next year? What's the story for next year? It must be enormously difficult. And the fact that they're trained to deal with this kind of stuff only makes it a little bit easier, I'd imagine.
Did you get any sense of her future intentions?
A little bit, yeah, a little. But it's for a print newspaper, so we'll keep it for tomorrow. But I don't know. I'm sure she would have said it to other people as well. Look, it's a tough time for them. There's a lot rumbling around in their heads. And on that as well, like whether it's Cheltenham or under the Hogan stand or Tokyo, there's a lot of conflicting emotions that goes through people's head at that stage. And look, it'll take weeks and probably months for all that to flush out in the wash, you know.
What's it like being a journalist over there?
You know, it's strange and it's not so strange because I was here for the 2019 Rugby World Cup, which was a very, very different experience. Obviously, there's no restrictions, there's no coronavirus. I traveled to about 12 different cities on that tour, saw a lot of Japan. Brilliant. You're concentrating on one sport. And over here, you're obviously restricted. We're out of a kind of a 14-day bubble now. Once you're here 14 days, you can use public transport. You're still asked to limit your movements, don't go to restaurants. And that's probably the hardest part. Actually, the diet has just crumbled in the last 2 weeks. If I eat another burger in the main press centre, I think I'll be off beef for life. But in terms of the work and gig, it's actually not that different because the Olympics anyway is so all-encompassing. It's 15 to 18-hour days anyway. It's not like you'd be knocking the laptop off at 9 p.m. over here and, you know, going down for a nice Japanese steak or a ramen noodle dish or whatever. It's all encompassing anyway. So in that sense, it's not too bad. And it's the Olympics. Like, there's something happening the whole time. And on top of everything else as well, Johnny, it's 116 Irish athletes. It's the biggest team we've ever had. So, look, it's kind of cliched as well. But the amazing thing is once you're in it, you feel nearly further away from the whole thing. Like, I haven't been to the Athletic Stadium yet. I haven't seen any of that. Carl Dennehy covers that for us over here. You know, if you were to ask me about the men's 400 metres or you know, the women's marathon that'll happen the weekend, it'll be straight over my head. You're tunnel visioned on what you're covering. And that's basically a day-by-day thing on what the Irish are doing that day. One of the most fun things I did was covering beach volleyball, which I did last week. I did rock climbing, or sport climbing as it is, last night.
You were a big fan of that, you were saying?
Sorry, say that again?
You're a big fan of the climbing. What's it called? The speed climb? Yeah, the wall climbing.
The wall climbing. Absolutely fascinating. And again, you know, we started off talking about modern pentathlon and something that was brought in the 19th century, or I think 1912, it's been in the Olympics since. Sports climbing is one of the four sports brought in this year. And no doubt millions of people are clicking their tongues. I think it was Des Lynam, when beach volleyball was first introduced for Atlanta, said going down the pub isn't an Olympic sport yet, but beach volleyball is. And there's always going to be that element of it. But you look at sports climbing and the Olympic motto was faster, stronger, higher. I mean, sports climbing pretty much ticks every box, and it's got a little bit of razzmatazz in there. You know, it's a young sport. I think the lad who won it is an 18-year-old from Spain, and it's just a great watch. It's fantastic visual sport. You've guys kind of on overhangs, racing up a wall the size of an aircraft hangar in 6 or 7 seconds. It's incredible stuff, and that's the way the Olympics is going. I mean, we're going to break dancing in Paris in 2024, or breaking, as it's called now as well. So, you know, I think when sports climbing actually had its first day here on Tuesday, it absolutely melted social media. And that's what the IOC is going after. It's going after younger people. It wants to target young people. And they're unashamedly going that way. So you can like it or you can dislike it. But in athletic terms, I think it ticks all the boxes. And in monetary terms, it certainly does.
There's a lot to be said for Melton social media as well. Leona Maguire obviously didn't have a great day. We're all building up to Sunday now. Have you been sort of around the camp in that regard, and all eyes on obviously Kelly, seeing she bring gold home?
Yeah, a little bit. Took my first trip to the Olympic Village today, and we got to chat to Bernard Dunn, the boxing high performance manager. Zara Antia gave us a few spare words, as he's inclined to do. And Brendan Irvine, the boxing team captain, who went out in the first round, all chatted to us. So, look, it's very much a sense of everything's done now. It's kind of a a hold your stance kind of feel to everything at the moment. They've done everything they can. You know, they've been over there since June 30th. You know, Kelly spoke very well after her semi-final win over the Thai boxer about how, you know, she doesn't do anything. She's not doing anything. I mean, it's the whole thing about the closer you get to the Olympics, the less glamorous it is. Not glamorous for the athletes at all. So yeah, I've been looking into a bit about. I'm not a boxing expert, but the girl she's fighting is. I've been lucky enough to see her twice, and she's a serious operator. She absolutely demolished an Uzbekistan fighter in the quarterfinal. I mean, demolished. I mean, she went after her in the ring. It was like letting a tiger out of a cage. And look, you can read too much into things, but the Uzbek to me looked like she was genuinely scared. Like she was just, get me out of here. And then the semi-final, Ferreira, the Brazilian, fought the veteran Finn fighter, and the Finn clearly saw a quarterfinal because she went in on the front foot and she tried to get her out of her stride. And Bernard Dunn made the point today. He said, yeah, but Ferreira, all she did was she took a step back, she saw what was happening, and by the middle of the first round, she was dominating the Finn. So, you know, she's bullish, she's a bit brutish, she's fiercely aggressive, but she's a fighter as well. So I don't know. It's going to be a fascinating contrast of styles because Kelly can fight in the back foot and pick off jabs and stuff. So I don't know. It's going to be a fascinating one.
She's absolutely dominating the headlines. I mean, it's been an interesting night because the Irish clubs in Europe and the League of Ireland clubs were amazing, but it's all about Kelly, and rightly so because of her performance. I suppose, finally, what caliber burger are we talking about here, and will you have another one?
How do you judge the caliber of burger? Taste test? I don't know. I had a very interesting burger with cranberry and brie on it, and you know what, I know it sounds all kinds of wrong, but it tasted all kinds of right. It was just, I don't know, was it the variety? It was like, I've had too many Swiss burgers, I've had too many gold medal burgers, so I went for the brie and the cranberry burger, and I don't know, Johnny, it went down very well. So I've obviously been here too long.
Far from cranberry and brie burgers, you were rare now.
It sure is. I'd kill for anything that's not beef based at this stage.
Enjoy the rest of your time.
Cheers, lads. Great chatting.
That was Brendan O'Brien of the Irish Examiner. That's our Olympic show with thanks to Indeed. Back again tomorrow on Off the Ball with Gráinne Walsh and Kevin Byrne previewing Kelly Harrington's bid for gold. We'll talk to you then.
The Olympic show on OTB Sports with Indeed, proud partner of Team Ireland.